Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and I'm hoping my guest, my co-host, Red Beckman, is going to be here with me. Red, are you on yet? Well, while we're waiting for Red to come online with us, let's open our show with a prayer. Almighty Father God, we just are so thankful for all the ways that you're blessing us these days, that you seem to be opening up ears and hearts and minds to the truth. And we've been so deceived in this country for so long, and it's really good that people's hearts are beginning to turn toward you, and that you are blessing us with good ears. And we just pray that your spirit is with us this night and throughout the show, and that you bring out the things that you want us to discuss and talk about, and we pray that everything we do glorifies you. In the name of Yeshua, we pray. Amen. Well, this has been an interesting week. Tonight, one of our guests will be Gary Forman. Gary will be calling in a little while. I don't believe he's available to call in right now, but he will be calling in probably in about 45 minutes to an hour. And he is the producer, an Emmy Award-winning producer, of the War of 1812 documentary that was on the History Channel that won the Emmy Award a few years ago. And right now, he's been working on campaign ads, and you'll probably see some of these coming across the country. I think he calls it the Spirit of 76, 1776, and it's all about constitutional principles and our founding fathers. And I think that the candidates, especially the Tea Party candidates, should really take advantage of these ads. I looked at them this afternoon, and they look great. Red, are you here with us?
I'm here now.
Well, hello, Red.
Yeah.
How's your day going?
Well, I'd rather not talk about it.
Okay.
It wasn't outstanding.
Let's talk about what you'd like to talk about.
Well, I'll tell you. We have such a variety of subjects that we go on. And so, of course, as I told you earlier this afternoon, I talked to a fellow, and he's thinking about running for congressman in his district in 2012. And
did you tell him he should be a Jeffersonian Democrat?
I sure did. And he'd been a lifetime Republican and everything, and when I explained to him that advantages of running in the Democratic side of the picture. Then, when I got done, I think he decided that he would run, if he runs, he would run as a Jeffersonian Democrat. Thomas Jefferson, of course, is one of the, supposedly the inspiration or originators of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party, they have their annual, pretty much annual Jefferson-Jackson Day dinners. And Jackson and Jefferson were both outstanding presidents, and they were outstanding for what they stood for. Their integrity and everything was were top-notch. And the Democratic Party, for the most part, has been stolen. And I think that if a person were to run some ads, if he's going to run for office, he run as a Democrat and then run some full page ads, of course, in major newspapers in the district where they're running, and just say the Democratic Party has been stolen, and say that it's time to bring back the principles that the founders lived by, and that this candidate that's running this ad is determined to bring back the principles upon which Jefferson and Jackson operated as leaders in this country. And I think it would cause a lot of people to sit up and pay attention. In the last presidential election, there were millions of people in this country who take the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms. They keep that. I mean, that is so sacred with them. But what did they do? They voted for Obama. And how do you explain that? How do you explain that kind of a phenomenon? A Second Amendment defender would vote for a fellow like Obama coming out of Chicago politics and pretty well committed to disarming the American people. How did it happen? And I think that's a question that we really need to confront the Tea Party people with, do they understand what party politics really has done for this country? They have caused us just so much grief and so much problem, and they really need to take a look at it.
Well, as I was talking to you on the phone earlier today, Red, about the whole the concept of the same people who are undermining our whole constitutional republic. In fact, they're undermining our whole society, starting with our religious foundation. Their policy involves penetrating every element, whether you're on the left or the right, or whether you're one religious group or one religious sect or another. These people are experts at going out there and getting their people into positions that are totally contrary to their beliefs, so that they can manipulate and subvert from the inside. They've done that with our two-party system. They've done that in our evangelical world. They've done it with our media. They've done it, they've done it with our judiciary. They have infiltrated everything out there. And they are sinister, and they really have no conscience, and they're all about controlling this world and enslaving people. And it's no wonder that we've gotten to the point where we are, because we've not trusted God, really, when it boils right down to it. If we had really stayed close to our relationship with God, I don't believe it would be in the pickle we're in today. I believe that our churches have surrendered that. But that's why we're waking up now too, because people are starting to recognize that there is a spiritual battle going on, right?
Yes, and of course I've tried to stress that over the years, that we're not in a political war. We're in a spiritual war. And these schemers, these treacherous people with their politics of control and the elite and all they have done, they of course they've done everything they can to keep us believing that the Democrats are for the working people, and the Republicans are for the rich, and it's kind of if people would read history, if they'd pay attention to history, back about the turn of the century back there from the 1800s to the 1900s, we had some serious political problems in this country, outrageously serious. And the people were totally in the dark, basically, as to what was happening. We didn't have radio and television news. We didn't have the multitude of newspapers and all of that. We had a few major newspapers. The Hearst newspapers, of course, they controlled the news media in this country, and they manipulated the people of this nation with that news. And we had the robber barons. I remember reading about the robber barons and the big money that came in there or got in and the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and Jay Gould and all these different ones, and they set up what they called the trusts, and today they call them corporations, of course. But Teddy Roosevelt came along. He recognized that those trusts were taking advantage of the fact that the people didn't have access to the kind of information they needed, really. And Teddy Roosevelt came in and he said he swore that he would break up the trusts, and he did. And so they made the Standard Oil split up and. And of course, Standard Oil went in one direction, and Exxon and such went another direction. And it was the Democrats who were the movers and shakers that made that happen. And 100 years later. You've got Bill Clinton in the White House. He's a Democrat. And Bill Clinton, his administration more or less overseen the rejoining of Exxon and Standard Oil. And we had that merger mania back there. And we've still got some of it going on. And the corporate America became even more dangerous and such under a Democratic administration. It was a Democratic administration that broke up the trust 100 years before. And 100 years later, it was just totally reversed. That's the nature of criminal politics. You don't know unless you have studied history and kept track of things. You just don't know what these schemers and these scoundrels are up to. You've got to pay attention. And, of course, the Tea Party people have been pretty much milling about in confusion with their signs. It didn't take them long to figure out. They thought that they could go to Washington, D.C. and the various cities and such and have their parades with their some of the great signs that they had were really good, but they didn't change anything in the political world with their signs, and they had to discover that. They had to figure that out. And so now we need to be doing everything we can to get the kind of information to the Tea Party people so that they can approach the problems with a little more know-how of how this system works, how these elite pull the wool over our eyes and such. And we got our work cut out for us, I can assure you of that. So history is a great teacher, but so many people don't like history, and that's too bad because I love history. And so anyway, let's go on from there.
You know, I've really, when I was younger, I had no passion for history at all. I enjoyed certain stories about history, but I don't know, it always struck me as just a matter of, you know, to pass a history test when you had to memorize dates and all of that kind of stuff, and it just seemed to be so much minutia to me. And now I really have gained this tremendous passion for history over the last few years, and I can't get enough of it because I'm discovering so much truth that shows and reveals and shines a light on where we are today. And there's just so much to be learned. It's a great exploration. So anyone who's not done any of homework in getting into especially the history of our country and those that have had a great impact here, which, you know, obviously goes back to Europe and the Vatican and England and all of that. If you don't have any knowledge of that, you're just lost today. I mean, really, yeah. How can anybody have a clue where we are today and what's going on without, you know, getting into studying some of that at least couple of hundred years worth of history?
Yeah, history, it to me, it's always been fascinating. And I've mentioned before that I've got a daughter that's kind of a garage sale junkie. I call her that. Anyway, she had been at a garage sale, and they had quite a few old Reader's Digest, some of them as old as, you know, like 70 years old. And I have enjoyed those magazines, those old magazines. The last one, I think, in that group, I've been collecting them, of course, for quite a while. The last one in that one group was about a 1948, and the earliest was a 1938. And so it was a 10-year span there covering World War II. And I read those articles there. Well, it was quite an extensive article there about China at that point in time and what they could see in the future. And I can assure you, they did not see in the future what has happened. They didn't see Walmart, of course, and that type of thing. But it was very, very interesting because it makes you a little more cautious about prognosticating what's coming, what is going to happen and where we will be in this country in another 50 or 60, 70 years. It's impossible for us to tell. However, I think that we can have an impact on it. I think that we can, leave our footprints, and that's what we have to try to do. And of course, the program here, you attach the name on it, Walls in Our Minds, and that little book of mine that came from, that's going to be around. It's going to be around for a long time. And, I have said, you know, I plan to kick butt after I'm gone, with the books and things and the videos. And of course we've mentioned that one video, that was done in 93. It's getting more hits today. There's more people watching that video today that was done in 1993. There has been, patriot and freedom-loving people out there with their websites that have picked up on that video. You can get it on Google, of course. This is how I think that we have to establish a record. Somehow or other, we have to establish a record of what we stood for, the conclusions that we came to back here in our day. We need to leave those impressions, with people, so that they if it's embedded in their minds, then they can pass it on to their children and their children's children.
Well, that's the other thing. People have stopped passing on our story.
Yes.
You know, we tribes and any society that wants to sustain itself, you've got to basically recreate yourself in the next generation, and we've really just failed to do that. We failed to pass our story on the way that, you know, generations in the past have done so. We just don't tell the story. We hand them the television set and let them entertain themselves, and we just don't get involved in a way that we need to recreate ourselves. That's one thing I appreciate about you, Red, that you've made a pretty much a lifetime of trying to pass something on to other people and to educate people and to make them aware of the risk that we're facing, and that's just not done in the average family anymore. I mean, we don't even, how many families even get together once a week for a meal together?
That is wife of 58 years always had a schedule, and we always ate together, the entire family. I have a daughter here, and of course her family, they live 5 miles away, and I'll tell you, they have absolutely no schedule. And they might be eating dinner at 8 o'clock at night. That's not the way it goes at my home, in my home. You know, it's within, you know, a 15-minute, 20-minute area every evening around 6 o'clock that we have our evening meal. And it's so strange because our four children were raised in a family where we were a family. And of the four, there's not one of them that really has the, you might say, the family, the glue that keeps things together. It just isn't there. And it just grieves me. It bothers me. And I don't know where we can put all the blame for this. Whether, you know, my wife and I, we did something wrong or not, I don't know. But the family unit just doesn't, it just isn't, of course, part of the problem today, it used to be that the family would pretty well be in a fairly small radius of territory. I was talking to one of my high school classmates. She's got a granddaughter in New York and a granddaughter in San Francisco. Well, you know, those are two sisters. San Francisco and New York, they're about as far as you can get apart in this country, and in a large city. They work they're city office girls. How do you get together? Now, of course, we do have this Facebook, and I don't know how that works because I don't particularly get into that kind of stuff. When our first great-grandchild was born here 3 or 4 months ago, within a couple of hours, it was born in Minneapolis. Within a couple of hours, we had the baby's picture right here. Because my granddaughter, with her Facebook or whatever, came and brought us a picture of our first great grandchild. That may help, you know, kind of bring families back together again. But boy, I think we're losing something.
Well, there's no doubt. We got to turn that around, though. We've got to change that in the same way that we've got to turn our hearts and minds to God and get some divine providence working here. We've also got to do our job in our own families, because how can we expect to control a country or a state or, you know, a community or a town if we don't really start doing the right things right in our own house. I mean, that when I was doing ambassador work with Promise Keepers back in the mid 90s, I mean, that was the one thing we really got on to the men about as far as being a Promise Keeper, was that how can you expect to do something in your church, for example, if you're not doing it in your own home? If you don't do it at home, it's not going to go anywhere else. I mean, anything else you do outside is probably not going to be particularly successful. So we've got to change our ways. We've got to begin to really understand that the price of liberty is vigilance. And that's it. We've abdicated our vigilance.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, as the economy continues to deteriorate, I was reading some numbers today about the foreclosure thing and the banking system, and I'll tell you, I think that we've got an opportunity. We've got a window of opportunity here for us to be able to communicate with people that we were not able to communicate with before, when their world kind of has a tendency to come unglued, which is what happens in when you have a failing economy. People are looking for answers, and we need to be available with answers. We need to be there as a support for these people, and sometimes it's hard to do, but I think we can build a reputation in a community as being someone that has the community at heart and people at heart to try to do everything we can to make life livable for them. I know it's difficult, but I'll tell you, we've got to do everything we can. The suicide rates are way up, and they're not going to get any better for a while, I can assure you. And that's you know, something that really bothers me, when people reach that point where they have no resources that they can go to for help, and that's a sad situation. Of course, it's a very difficult situation. Twice, at least in my life, I've had an opportunity, or was the responsibility of helping somebody get through a situation. Back in 1981, I think it was, we had a farmer that the Internal Revenue Service was harassing, and they were putting so much pressure on him. And if his family and his neighbors had not just literally hung on to him, he would have committed suicide. I spent a couple of hours with him one day in the Holiday Inn in Great Falls, Montana. I'll never forget it, because something like that leaves an indelible print on your mind that you just never get away from it, and you never forget it. And he didn't commit suicide, and when they prosecuted him criminally, he won with a jury that came out and said not guilty. And I'll tell you, it made my efforts up to that point more than just a little bit worthwhile, because we had been running the television and such across Montana, and a little gray-haired lady on that jury. The first vote in the jury room was 11-1 for conviction. There was a little gray-haired lady there that said, no, not guilty. And the other 11 were very upset with her. They were going to browbeat her a little bit, and then she started explaining. And right away, one of the other ladies on the jury, she said, I heard about that. I heard about that television special. And you know, it took about a day, but when that jury came out, they said not guilty. And so you see, it's things like that. When you see the results of what you're doing and how hard you're working and trying to put things together, you see these things happen, and it's a thrill to see that kind of thing happen. You know, it's just I don't know how to explain it other than that. You know, if you save someone's life from you know, from a self murder, suicide, I'll tell you, that's pretty pretty exciting. I don't know how I got off on that, but I did. Are you still there, Terry, or did I lose you? Terry got disconnected, or either that or I'm disconnected. I don't know which, but I'm wondering what happened. We've got some dead air here if I don't hear from somebody. Is there anybody there? How about our producers? Mama Cook's available.
Oh, boy. Oh, okay. Now I'm live. Red, are you still there, or did I lose you? Somebody's there. I hear them.
Well, I'm here, Terry. It's me, and I called in because Red sounded like he was all alone.
Well, I was here, but my Skype connection had dropped off, and when I called back in, it was muted, so he couldn't hear me. I was trying to talk to him, but
I saw you. Go ahead.
Do you want?
Yeah,
you
I
want
saw
me
you
to
written
call
that
you?
On the. We're both trying to talk at the same time.
So are you going by Stan here or what?
Yes. I wanted to ask, is Red, can you hear us?
I think he hung up. I heard him.
No. Can he call back in?
I think I heard him. Well, I'm hoping he'll call back in.
Okay.
If he does, I'm sure he'll get a live mic. But in the meantime, you wanted to talk about the white pages and the situation with Lakin and all that stuff?
Yeah, I was curious, to understand that a little better, and wondered what whether Red is following that at all, and if so, what he thinks.
You know, I don't know how much he's up on that, Stan, and I know that Dr. Kate is, and hopefully she'll jump in here because I think it would be good for her to share kind of her feelings about that. I think she's a little concerned that that there's too much public friction that's being created out there as a result of everything that's been going on, and I fear that that's kind of happening from both sides, and I think there's a little blame to go around, and I think Kate's kind of maybe right in some of her concerns about that.
I picked up on that too, and concerned about it. We sure don't need any friendly fire, knocking each other out here. Is she on?
Well, and I don't know if Kate's given herself a live mic or not. Kate, are you muted? Can you hear us? Are you willing to come on and chat for a minute?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you
are.
Yes,
we do.
Hi. I'm trying to find... Okay, here's Red. Let me get him back. Sorry, I was just trying to... I was going to interject here and find out where Red was. But, Red, are you on right now?
I'm on right now. I got cut off somewhere. I don't know when.
Hi, Red.
Actually, you were doing fine. It's just that when I was muted, you couldn't hear me, so you thought you weren't being heard. But you were. You were actually a live mic.
And then I tried to call in and tell you you were being heard, but I didn't get on there in time. But hello again. Talked to you a couple hours ago.
Yes.
How you doing?
And I have a confession to make. While this all happened, I was out in the kitchen making a sandwich, and then it all got
shame
quiet.
On you,
so I came
Kate.
Back, and it was a problem. My apologies. Please go ahead, gentlemen.
I figured, actually, Kate, what Stan is asking about, I'd like to get your input on. We might want to bring Red up to snuff on what's being asked. The question was regarding what we thought about the white pages relative to the defense of LTC Terrence Lake and what had been going on with the defense there and some of the outside attacks, if you will. I don't know if I'd call them attacks, but they appear to be because they are certainly critical, I believe, of the defense that has been put on. And Red, and the question was, had you followed that, Red? And that's the reason I asked Kate to come on, because I know she's followed it very closely and has some concerns, which I think her concerns are legitimate. She and I don't exactly see perfectly eye to eye on this, but we certainly both want the best for what is going on with LTC Terrence Lake, and we certainly want the best defense to be put on, but we also would like to see some consistency and some unity shown in the press.
Well, that's difficult to get any unity in the press.
Well, I'm talking about the people that are putting things out there in the public venue.
Yeah,
I mean, the other military people.
The press releases.
Kate, are you still there?
What?
Yes.
Is Kate still on with us? I'd kind of like to hear what Kate's response to that.
Well, I've met Lieutenant Colonel Lakin. I've followed it. I've, of course, have written about and followed the eligibility issue for a long time. And I just want to note, to start out with, that General Vallely's latest statement basically, and other individuals have basically taken issue with the defense of Lieutenant Colonel Lakin and insisted that rather than going after a birth certificate and documentation, that they really focus on the broader definition of natural-born citizen. And whereas I agree in principle, of course, because natural-born citizen is it has a whole history to it. I've written about it. I know your listeners are advanced on it. But what I'm objecting to is the sort of public airing of differences in legal strategy. And regardless of whether Lieutenant Colonel Lakin's attorney is open to this or not, I don't believe that we ought to be sharing any public strategy or any concerns publicly. It just gives our enemies more information. And I note that General Vallely's latest statement I'm kind of concerned about it because initially when I talked with him and when people had talked with he and his staff, they were not interested in this birth certificate issue at all. Now they're summarily dismissing it as saying it doesn't exist, which is significant in itself, but attacking or just criticizing the defense of Lieutenant Colonel Lakin, making sure that he goes in another direction. So I have to be very frank and suspect provocateurs. Another diversion. These people are not standing in his shoes. And that particular documentation, specifically because it came from, the orders came from Obama, must be produced. My feeling is that the focus, if there's criticism publicly, should be on the military justice system, should be focusing on Congress making sure he gets a fair trial and getting this issue out. So I want to call this out and suggest that those military members who are so insistent on critiquing this guy's defense, I think they ought to stand up and give a national press conference on this issue of eligibility. If it is a national security issue, as General Vallely is saying, well, then don't attack Lieutenant Colonel Lakin's defense. Attack the issue of it being a national security issue. I agree, it is. But why are we attacking each other? It reminds me of the tactic that eventually, I think, through which Leo D'Onofrio lost a lot of credibility, is he did brilliant research, but essentially came out attacking everybody on our side and essentially giving the Justice Department rationale and ideas for taking down Orly Tace's defense and taking down, you know, all of these things. So I don't trust it, I don't like it, and I would ask everybody out there who is doing that to pay attention to the real issue. So those are my concerns. I'm obviously not biased at all, I'm sure. You can tell that I'm trying to give a neutral opinion, but I'm really concerned. We're playing with a man's life here. We are playing with our national defense, and it's time for people to stand up here and stop attacking these defenses and get at the issue. That's my feeling.
Red, you were trying to say something, and I'm afraid I cut you off.
I'll tell you, I don't know enough about the whole situation to make any comments as to his defense. Other than this, we know that the system that is prosecuting the colonel is absolutely corrupt. It is corrupt. I mean, there's no intention on their part of making this a fair trial. If there was, this would be going smoothly. There wouldn't be all of this hassle and such, but they want a conviction, and they are willing to do whatever they have to do, and they'll do anything criminal that they need or whatever to bring about a conviction. Because, you know, everything that Obama stands for is evil. I mean, the guy has his entire career in the White House has been to, you know, manipulate things and do things that are not really proper. His failure to have the National Day of Prayer. But he had a national day of Hindu, or not Hindu, but Muslim prayer, and he had all these guests at the White House and all of that. This is, you know, this is just rubbing the American people's nose in the dirt. And so we're not dealing with people who want to be honest, that want an honest verdict. They are going to do whatever it takes to hang the colonel out to dry. And so You see, this is the kind of thing where we have to recognize the spiritual values that are involved here. And we have to recognize that there is so much evil involved in the Obama administration, the Justice Department, and the whole works. They have absolutely no intention of doing what's right. It isn't there. And so that's the kind of stacked deck we're dealing with. And if they can gain by our confusion on this, they'll be happy as can be. We're going to have to do some pretty serious praying and asking God to intervene. Because this is all satanic as far as I'm concerned. I can't explain it any other way, because I've been involved in the federal court system now for about 35 years. And all I have seen, it just progressively gets worse. And the military courts of justice are no different. I mean, they are getting worse by the day as well. And our thinking that we can outsmart them, we might be able to outsmart them, but I think that they will do anything evil that they have to do to swing the balance of justice in their direction.
Well, I only heard about half of that conversation because my Skype connection dropped again. I'm really batting 1,000 tonight. Really good. So did we lose Stan? Did Stan drop off? He must have. Red, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good. I was concerned. It was so quiet. I didn't know if you were hearing me or not. Well, Red, what the issue is, that I don't think it was really said where you could understand it, is that the defense is just focusing on primarily the birth certificate numbers. They basically said that if Obama would produce a birth certificate, then he would comply with his orders, which obviously, you know, even if he's born in Hawaii, he's still not a natural born citizen. And so the whole concept, I find it very confusing. And that's my greatest objection, is that even if they win, they lose because they have conceded to a lesser definition of natural born citizen than what is in fact the constitutional definition based on the laws of nation as codified in the book Laws of Nation by Vattel. So that's been my objection to it. And I've been pretty vocal about that, simply because I don't see how they can win with their present position. So it's a difficult one for me, because I happen to agree with those people who are putting some pressure on. I just think that Kate is correct that there needs to be a unified front out there, and I don't think either side has done a particularly good job of trying to accomplish that. And you know, maybe it's not in Terrence Lakin's best interest for it to be all unified and hunky dory. It might actually be an advantage to have someone other than him putting these concepts forward, and bringing that pressure upon the courts martial, and the military from outside. That may actually be a not such a bad strategy.
Well, you know, I don't know how to say it, and I don't say very well, but when you're dealing with something so corrupt as the U.S. Justice Department, and you know that the criminal justice system for the military is corrupted. It has to be. And so how do you win in a ballpark where, you know, they set the rules, they change the rules when they want to, and they're in that position where they can do anything they want to do, and they're protected by the entire governmental system. And so it's very, 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 very difficult. Look at the young fellow that refused to wear the UN colors and whatnot in, where was it, Bosnia? You know, look how they run him through the mill. And he was absolutely 100% correct in what he was saying. His contract was with the United States of America. And his contract was not, had any, nothing to do with the UN. And they shanghaied him out of the army, out of the service, and of course the U.S. Supreme Court went with it and the whole works. And so, sure, that's been 10 years or so, since that happened. But it was in the courts for, I don't know how many years. And I think it's all over with now. I think it's all finally been resolved. He's out of the service, of course, and as far as the service is concerned, he's got a black mark on his record. But he stood up for principle, and it was because he had a father who family that stood behind him, and they were people that understood the spiritual battle that they were in. And I should be able to think of his name, but it escapes me here at the moment. But he stood up and he paid a price for standing up and being honest. And the same thing may happen with Colonel Lakin. But I hope he continues to stand up and stand for that which is true. But there is a price to pay many times for that. I've been in that kind of a situation a time or two in my own life, and I've just had to let the system, through their corruption and all, continue. I have that case before the U.S. Supreme Court that was docketed in August of 96, and the Supreme Court has not heard it yet, and they never will, because the case literally takes the power away from the federal judiciary. And they're not going to let that happen, and that's absolute pure corruption on the part of the court system. And it's been a win for me as far as I'm concerned, and a lot of other people the same way. They believe that what we have done is we have won something that may not be in the record, but we know that we won because we know that the court don't want to touch that thing because they know we're correct. In fact, we have the Solicitor General in Washington, D.C., agreeing that I was 100% correct in what I was saying. I sued a federal judge, of course. They always said you couldn't sue a federal judge. Well, we proved that you can. We're fighting a war, a spiritual war, with other than spiritual weapons. And it's very hard to win in that kind of a situation. Did we lose you again, Terry?
Hey, Red, this is Dale Robertson. How are you doing?
Oh, Dale, how are you?
Good. I got your message a little late, but I figured I'd get a call on the show, and it's great to listen in.
Yeah, well, Terry said he was going to call you and try to get across to you that we'd like to have you on the program. Terry's having trouble with his connections tonight for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, there's a lot of background noise there. You must be having a party.
Somebody's having a party.
Can you hear me now, Red?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I'm good.
Dale,
I was here
Dale
while ago,
Robertson
but I was
is
here.
On.
I hear Dale. Hello, Dale.
Hello, Terry. How you doing?
We're good. Tell us what's going on with the tea parties.
Well, people are taking their country back. I mean, we're fighting the establishment. I started long before anybody else did, and I don't necessarily like the Republicans trying to co-opt the Tea Party, but which they are. But you've seen the kickback from like Karl Rove and the establishment. They don't like anybody who's conservative. They just all they can care about is winning the elections, and so they're willing to become anything you want them to be, and then they change into this chameleon, basically, to get elected, and they go back to their own business as usual. But Americans need to unite together under this movement in order to get our country back on the right track.
Well, can I elaborate on that, and then let have you make a comment afterwards?
Okay, go ahead.
I don't believe it's the Tea Party, per se. I don't believe that that the objection is to the fact that the Tea Parties are having an effect. I think the real objection is that the Tea Party has allowed certain people who are not establishment politicians, they are people who are not controlled by the backroom dealers, and therefore they don't have any control over them, and they don't want people getting in there that are going to actually go against what the established politicians represent, which is not the people. And so if you've got a politician who's really going to be a statesman, who's really going to hold to the Constitution, who's really going to represent individual rights and states' rights, that's what they object to. They don't want to lose control, and the Tea Party is facilitating real people who are not a part of this machine to get into a position where they might get into office. And let me give you a perfect example of that right here in Colorado. Just like, we've had in some of the other primaries that just took place and is prompting what you're saying, we've got a guy here in Colorado by the name of Dan Mays who's running for Colorado governor. And Dan has never been in politics. He's been a successful businessman. They have done everything they can, and I'm talking about the Republican Party. I'm talking about the people who have been the money behind the Republican Party and who have been the ones that have been, controlling things for a long time. They will do and say anything they have to keep Dan Mays from getting elected, including getting Tom Tancredo to run as a third party candidate to split the vote.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think that both parties are corrupt. I think that they know they have access to our tax dollars, and they don't want somebody in there that actually believes in the Constitution and realize the federal government shouldn't have taxing authority the way they're taxing us today. And the government basically wants to continue to grow and expand. Each side wants to grow government, but they want to grow it for their benefit. And I've addressed this time and time again. I said, if we really wanted to cut the budget, if we incentivize government employees to reduce the budget, we'd cut the budget in half in a couple of years, easily. But these guys don't want to cut the budget. They have access to your wallets, and they want to continue to expand government and manipulate policies in order to stay in office.
Well, they're also controlling the purse strings.
Right.
Because the ones that have put a lot of money into the party have been the very people who have been controlling it from the back rooms.
The benefactors, correct.
And that's making it much more difficult for some of these statesman candidates that the Tea Party is promoting to really raise money, because, the Tea Party people will make signs and come out, but I don't see too many of them digging deep enough into their pocket to really promote these people against some of the machine you know, the way that the media goes, they control the media too, so there's no way to get enough advertising and get the word out to the public without having a substantial piggy bank. And the Tea Party people, at least in Colorado, they need to be digging a little deeper.
Well, they need to dig deeper and realize, I mean, I don't think most of these people who jumped into the Tea Party really understand what is happening with politics and how they've been manipulating things for a long time. But once they had access by, you know, taxing power on the individual Americans, they began to slowly steal our dollars. And now to the point that they've gone out of their mind with this administration where they're just raking the American people over the coals and trying to convince us that it's the right thing to do. I apologize.
Sounds like you got a plane going overhead.
Well, I'm at the hospital right now, so I've had to come take care of my father. He's sick, so.
I appreciate you calling in under those circumstances.
Well, my whole family's here, so I can break away for a little bit. So that's why I called the station to say hello and I got your message. But most PT partiers are really unaware of what is happening with our system of government. We don't have representation. We have a bunch of special interests. They're taking money by writing policies that are passed by Congress, that it makes their wallets big and fat, and they take the excess and they give it back to the politicians so they can keep remaining in their controlling those policies, keep supplying the funds to them. And what we've created, monopolies. And, you know, our government is supposed to be breaking monopolies apart, not institutionalizing these corrupt forms of businesses. And both sides are equally guilty. And both major political parties are equally guilty. And the intent of the Tea Party is to break that hedge that they've created and to start getting real people in the office. And I really believe that we have to attack every political party. And we need to find a patriot in the Democratic Party, a patriot in the Republican, the Libertarian, the Constitution Party. And if we lose in one vehicle up to the primaries, then we still may win with an independent candidate. We may have a patriot as a Democrat or Libertarian. And if we just find patriotic candidate in each party, then our chances of getting true representation gets better and better. But the Republicans have been trying to co-opt this movement for the last 2 years, and they've been trying to direct, you know, the Tea Party to support their candidates. And a lot of these Tea Parties are starting to wake up and realizing they're not going to go with the establishment.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people jumping on board with Tom Tancredo here, who's now running as an American Constitution Party candidate. And it's driving me crazy because this guy has been out there preaching about how much of a waste it is and how wrong it is for people to run as a conservative on a third party because it splits the vote and they generally do not get elected, which, you know, obviously we know is true, even though we'd love to see that be broken at times. It's still, for the most part, just a matter of the way things are. And but here this guy is. He has basically been a bully. Tancredo has been a bully most of his career. He's been an outcast in Washington. He's been basically a one-dimensional candidate who has really done little more than harp on the immigration issue and really hasn't accomplished that much in his political career. Even though he's been a, you know, a career politician, he really hasn't accomplished that much. You look at the immigration issue, he certainly hasn't really had a tremendous impact there. He pushed some people to talk about it, but what did he really get done in the field? Not much. And here he is substantially splitting the vote. So, and it just kills me that the conservatives don't understand that a vote for this guy is now a vote for a rubber stamp of Obama. And I know Red wants to talk to you about that.
Okay, good.
Well, you see, we just have not heard, or we have not seen any real, I don't think we've seen any evidence of any ingenuity. You can use ridicule and such in a campaign and gain a lot of ground. When I ran for governor in Montana, they had a statewide debate for candidates, and when it came my turn to answer a question first, of the four, we had the rules set out for how the debate was to be, controlled. And the head of the local newspaper, he was the questioner, and he was not supposed to ask any personal questions. He was supposed to ask questions that all four candidates could answer as to what they would do if they were elected governor of the state of Montana. Well, he violated the rules. He said, "Mr. Beckman, you're not a Democrat." He said, you should be running as a libertarian or an independent or whatever. And he was nasty. He sounded nasty, and he was nasty. He hated my guts, of course, prior to this. Anyway, when it came time for me to answer, I always thought that, the Democratic Party was supposed to be the working man's party. And I said, I'm a working man. And so I figured it was the party where I belonged. And, of course, my family, everybody was Republicans from way back. And of course, they just disowned me pretty well when I ran as a Democrat. But when I answered that question, I said, I am a Jeffersonian Democrat. I've studied a lot of Thomas Jefferson's, what he wrote and what he believed in, and his concept of what government is all about and what it should be. And I said, I like Thomas Jefferson and what he had to say about good government. I said, I'm a Jeffersonian Democrat. If these other three candidates, if they don't agree with Tom Jefferson, I have to assume that they are Karl Marx Democrats. Now, that was just a very simple statement, but it was a statewide debate amongst the four Democratic candidates for governor. And I'll tell you, when I said that if they didn't agree with Tom Jefferson and his politics, they must be Karl Marx Democrats. I haven't heard anybody out there talk about Karl Marx Democrats. Why? They're not thinking. They're not using their heads. They're not coming up injecting some ingenuity in this thing. And when I said that, I'll tell you, it rang a bell with people all over state of Montana, and they are still thinking about it. And this was 30 years ago. And I haven't heard anybody talking about, people being Obama rubber stamps. All these Democrats that are running for re-election, they voted for Obama's health care. I follow the newspapers, and I have yet. It tells about all these congressmen and senators, in fact, the congressman from our district right here. He voted for that health care thing, and he got so much pressure that he's leaving office. He's retiring after about 7 or 8 terms. He is getting out of there because he caught so much flack. Well, why isn't somebody coming up with this and saying, hey, Mr. Candidate, you're a Democrat. Are you a rubber stamp for Obama? Let's use some simple terms that people out on the street can understand. But I haven't seen it. I have not seen it. And I haven't seen anybody. I said back there, well, the Democratic Party has been stolen. There's a bunch of outlaws that have gained control of the Democratic Party. There's a bunch of outlaws out there that have gained control of the Republican Party. Now, if your family was Republican, so you think you've got to be a Republican, you better stop and pay attention and recognize that the Republican Party that we had 50 years ago probably isn't anything like what we have today in the Republican Party. The same goes for the Democratic Party. I see so little out there in the Tea Parties where they are ridiculing the hierarchy of the Democratic Party, the hierarchy of the Republican Party. Why aren't they saying, hey, you guys have got us into all this mess. It wasn't just the Democrats. It wasn't just George W. Bush. It's all of you put together. We need a total overhaul in the Congress. We need an overhaul in the Senate. We need to get people out of there that are not part of the criminal, you might say, hierarchy of the two parties. And I just don't see, you know, one in 88, I was a candidate. And the question was asked, what would you do if you were governor to support the federal government's work with to help single parent families to be able to do their job better? All of the candidates. Oh, if I'm elected, I'll work at the state level. We'll work with the federal government. It comes my turn to answer the question, and I said, why in the world would anybody want the United States Congress to get involved in the child care with people, with single-parent families and such? Why would anybody want the Congress of the United States to get involved in taking care of these people? I said, the Congress of the United States, they are the worst child abusers in history. Child abusers, everybody understands that. Right off the street, everybody understands what you're talking about. I said, they have put a tax on every child that is born at birth. They have a tax load on their heads. That is child abuse, and that's what we've got to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is speaking at the grassroots level that people understand. And I don't hear this kind of politicking.
Gentlemen, I want to introduce you guys. I believe we have Gary Foreman online with us. Gary, do you have a live mic?
Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Okay.
Gary, I don't know if you have ever been acquainted with Dale Robertson, who was one of the founders of the Tea Parties.
Yes. You're talking about from Oklahoma?
Texas. The great state of Texas.
Well, let's see. I know Dale Robertson, the actor.
Correct. I'm not the actor. I'm not related to him.
Okay. Well, I've known Dale personally since about 1987. Of course, I'd watch him as I grew up on television, but I personally have met up with him several times. His home, if I recall, was in Yukon, Oklahoma.
Well, this Dale Robertson is a different Dale Robertson. He's not an actor. He's with the Tea Parties. And he's down in Texas, and Red Beckman is on with us. I'm sure you knew that.
Yeah, hi, Red.
Gary.
Hi.
And I was
Gary,
the actor, so just to let you know that.
I'm sorry, I broke up there. What's that?
My mom actually named me after the actor, so that's where I got my
name. That's quite a compliment. He's because that Dale Robertson also is quite a gentleman and quite a patriot. I really enjoyed him. I think he's suffering from his gaining years right now, but he was a true Westerner and a great gentleman with a great talent. So Dale, where are you living in Texas?
Houston area, or just outside of Houston. So
oh yeah, well, I'm very familiar with it. I do a lot of projects down there, so And I'm sorry, did I interrupt you there, Terry?
No, not at all. Gary, I was just going to let Dale know that you are and our listeners, that you are a film producer. I believe in one of the companies you work with is Native Son, correct?
Yeah, well, that is my company and my production company. And we've been doing producing long-term or long-form shows for History Channel, A&E, PBS, Discovery, that type of thing for many years. And but we're also involved with a lot of other things now, and our passion has been and continues to be this issue that we're facing right now in the campaigns, and we're trying to lend some of the leverage of our production facilities and resources to maybe help turn a corner with some of these candidates in their quest to gain this country back.
And that's one of the things that I thought that, you know, you and Dale might have something going in common there. Dale may very well have some Tea Party candidates that could use your services. I saw some of your ads this afternoon after you sent me those links, which I very much appreciate. And they are equally impressive with the rest of your work. I mean, I just saw your Emmy Award-winning War of 1812 production on the History Channel just a few days ago, and it is an impressive piece of work, and I see why you won that award.
Well, thank you very much.
I'll let you guys have some conversation about that. So.
Well,
I'd like to talk to you after this program. Right now I'm actually at the hospital. I actually got to go. I'm sorry that I have to.
No, that's okay. We'll connect. I'm sure we will.
Okay, so you guys can give Gary my email, and then we'll get together afterwards, Gary, okay?
That's perfect. That'll work out, Dale. Looking forward to talking to you then.
And, Red, it's a pleasure being here. I wish I could spend more time, but I've got to go. So, okay, you guys have a great evening.
I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Okay.
Thanks, Dale.
Bye.
Well, Gary, tell us a little bit more about you're calling it the Spirit of 76, 1776?
Well, actually, you're really close. It's the 1776 principles, and it's based off, of course, the Declaration of Independence and that Spirit of 76. But it's, as you probably saw from, I don't know how much time you were able to spend with the different pieces, but as you saw, it's using the genius and the quotes and the spirit of our founders and their way of approaching life in general to make a statement about the things that are relevant to us today. And so what we did is we looked at all the different topics and how we could apply the appropriate different quotes from the founders, and you know, they ring so true today for us. They should ring all the time, but I think people are waking up. And Red, I was listening to you talk about, what the candidates are saying and not saying, and I think I agree with you pretty much. I would say though that for a lot of us, it's not soon enough for what people are doing. However, I have to say, and I think you would agree that there's been a big turnaround in a relatively short period of time. But that's not good enough, really, because of the fact we've fallen asleep behind the wheel for such a long period of time in this country. And now I would also agree with you that the fact that in many ways this is not a Democratic or Republican finger-pointing. None of this would have happened if the American people would have paid attention to their duties and to be vigilant. And the only way that people can steal things from you is not only will you, by letting them, but through your own ignorance and by falling asleep. And that's what we've done here. Our focus has been for way too many years is on inane entertainment. And then all of a sudden we wonder why all our possessions and our liberties are gone. So, I really connected with that statement you made about child abuse with the taxation we're facing and will and the increased taxation we're about to experience. So it's a very challenging time. of course, but I think that I'm seeing more people picking up materials and becoming their own inner scholars on this subject. And I would bet to even guess that most of the people that you see in the Tea Party movement, if you would have asked them 2 or 3 years ago if they could imagine them marching or even running for office, they would have been totally out of their minds. But now we're seeing some major things turn around. I just listening to some of the people that you've talked about and people on your show that are running for different people with no political experience, and thank goodness for that. I just had a candidate for a county commissioner come into my home yesterday, and she's never dreamed of running for anything, but she's been an incredible businesswoman. And then she ran into all these increased property taxes, and then all her business associates said the same thing. My property tax is way up. And finally, she got into problem solving, and that was, it's time for her, to take up the service. And I think that if I can just move this thought a little bit further along, just want to share, ask you this question. Based on what our founders were talking about 230, 240 years ago, don't you believe that this whole idea of service is very much like leading a congregation? In other words, you're doing it for a deeper reason other than your ego or, financial advancement. I mean, it's a calling, just like you would for, your congregation. Don't you feel that that's what this should be really about? It's a calling?
I agree with you on that. It needs to be, our values, mm-hmm. our core values have to change. We've got to put a value on our freedoms, which we never did, we have not done in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We need to put a value on the rights that the founders so carefully delineated in the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution, like the Bill of Rights especially, the rights that we have, and I'll tell you, people just haven't had that. It just hasn't been part of them.
No, you're right.
It's something that needs to be so firmly, solidly embedded in people's minds, and of course we've been victims of the scoundrels and such that decided that they would use the public schools to gain control of the minds of the people,
mm-hmm.
and they've done quite a job of it.
Yes, they have. One other thing I wanted to mention here is as you were talking about this is that I really sense, from the involvement and the energies coming out of some of these surprise results, of course, for the entrenched. But I'm really seeing this as a moment in time where people are seeing the light switches going on for themselves that who are business people and people who are in the community that never saw themselves as a politician, could never dream that they would ever think about it, but now they're seeing other people pulling it off. They're seeing that people coming from way behind in the polls and people coming out of nowhere becoming statesmen or about to become statesmen. And I think that in itself, it's no different than a young kid watching an Olympic athlete achieve or reach a goal, and the young kid says, or even a student watching somebody else excel in studies says, I can do that. I can do that. And I think there's what's really exciting now. I think there are many, many people from all walks of life looking at this chance to be a statesman, and to saying, I want to give it a shot, even if it's for one or two terms. I just want to do this for my family, my country, my community. And I really think that is going to be the quest here, and at least I'm hoping it's going to be the new spirit that's going to drive this thing. But I'm seeing this, and I saw this lady who came, sat down in my house yesterday, and she's brilliant, and she's got a great mind, and she's, but she, you know, it's kind of so refreshing that she is gaining so much support because she isn't a politician. She's one of us. And I think this is what, you know, when I read the words of Benjamin Franklin and John Adams and Sam Adams and Jefferson, I mean, really, and I spend a lot of time every day now just poring over their materials and their quotes. These people really understood the whole concept of service as a real public servant. And it was so different than what we're facing today. Not the arrogance, not the sarcasm, not the Barney Frank type of person and ridiculing the very people that he's supposed to be representing. I mean, I really am excited about how people are responding to these results. They're watching this, and they're really seeing that this is their moment. And I think it's going to crystallize. I wouldn't have been able to say this several months ago, but I'm saying it now. I just feel it. And I'm praying that that's really going to be the, because that's really the spirit of 76, honestly, is to feel complete service to something greater than yourself.
Well, you know, you talked about this calling.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a very deep calling for people because, let's face it, it's not going to be easy. They're going to use everything against you. They're going to use regulations, campaign law, and statutes that have been established just to trip up a newcomer.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to look at how you've entered a $200 or $20 donation, and whether or not you put down whether or not it's from somebody that has a particular profession, or if you put down unknown. And if you put down unknown profession on that $20 donation, they're going to fine you $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 because you're a newcomer and didn't know any better. Then they're going to get their media cronies to come out and to say things like, well, you don't have any experience, so you're unfit. And they're going to hammer it. And they're going to figure out some other way to taint you, to take something you said about your past, and they're going to try to twist it into something that you lied about or you exaggerated about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not going to be easy for these people who are stepping forward, and they've got to have that calling to understand that this is what they're going to have to fight their way through, but they have to stand tall. They cannot quit. They've got to stay the course, and then the people have got to rally around them and be willing to support them both with their words and with their pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't do that, and if we can't all, in essence, have that calling, we're never going to beat this machine.
Yeah. Well, you know, I totally agree with you. I've been seeing that, you know, you talk about this total immersion, you know, what we have to really make people realize is that, you know, as much as people get caught up in entertainment so they can, you know, be immersed in stories and mostly film, television, sometimes literature, not as much anymore, but other people's stories, I think they got to realize, ladies and gentlemen, this is your time for your story. I mean, you talk about drama, you want drama? You have drama in ways that you can probably not even imagine. But even if you can't imagine some of it, you need to understand that you need to immerse yourself in this drama because it's real. And if we don't take care of it, it's just going to thunder down the valley to one generation after another. And it's over. And, you know, it's almost impossible to ever regain it back. But, you know, I just also think that people are, when it comes to these games, that you see being played out, I really feel that people are no longer as sheepish and as foolhardy as they used to be, and naive. I really think that they're waking up, and I think they're understanding the tricks, and they're understanding the loopholes and the minefields out there. But you're right. I mean, people have to really decide how much of a patriot you're going to be. This is not for the weak, you know, faint of heart. This is not for people with, you know, who want to play milquetoast or sit on a fence. This is either, you know, this is join or die, as they sit on the flag. This is, you know, liberty or death. And death maybe not so much physical, but certainly killing the human spirit in every way possible, absolutely.
Red?
I'm still here.
Yeah. I know you got something on your mind.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm thinking, you know, about these people that are getting into politics for the first time, and the problems that the system is going to, the roadblocks that the system is going to throw up in front of them to try to stop them and slow them down. I think that, you know, we had that situation in Texas where, you know, this crowd pleaser, Glenn Beck, really messed up the Texas primary governors for the governor. Mm-hmm. Just by asking a simple question and whatnot, and the lady that was running against the governor didn't know how to handle it. She didn't know how to answer the question. You know, and of course the media just picked up on it. Glenn Beck picked up on it big time, and that one little situation just destroyed her campaign and destroyed her chance of unseating the governor. This is the way they play the game. You've got, you know, Glenn Beck is supposed to be so conservative in all of this. But he won't say a word about the eligibility of Obama. He won't say a word about what really happened on 9/11. If you're talking about that, why he'll accuse you of being a nut. And so 90% of what Glenn Beck and Gush Limbaugh, and you'll notice I said Gush Limbaugh, I've called him that for a long time, Hannity and all these guys, 90% of what they say will probably be 100% correct. And we have to recognize that these people are in the game for the money. They are in it for the money. And they have discovered, well, when I first did a radio talk show, was I think the first one was in 76. Everybody was trying to be a Tom Snyder type of interviewer and such, and they would try to they would interrupt and be nasty and just really difficult to work with. The media found out that was losing audience. They were losing their audience. Today you don't have that. It is much more sophisticated, like I say, with Limbaugh and Hannity and these guys. 90% of what they say is going to be correct. The new candidate, they have to understand that. I've talked to some of these Tea Party people, and they think that Glenn Beck is the greatest thing that ever happened to the political situation in this country. Oh, he talks about the Constitution and all of that. But if he was right 100% of the time, I can assure you
that he wouldn't be on the staff of Fox News. And these new candidates out here, they have to recognize that this is the way the game is played. This is what happens. You've got these guys out there, they're talking, everything is absolutely correct until something comes along, and boy, they'll be on the other side. And it's hard to communicate this with some people that are just recent, people joining the Tea Party. They think that they've got most of the answers. And basically, they haven't even gotten to first base yet. So anyway, it's a minefield out there. But I'm glad to see some of the Tea Party candidates, those that are endorsed by the Tea Party, are winning some primaries. And the Delaware one, of course, just happened. And they're winning primaries, but what's going to happen in November? And that's the scary part about this, because every one of these people that have won in the primaries are going to be a target, big time. And I hope they understand that. And I think that this is why I mentioned having these little simple things like the child abuse thing. And the rubber stamp thing. I cannot understand why anybody running against an incumbent Democrat that voted for the health care thing. I would be reminding them every campaign appearance that you've got, I would be reminding them of Pelosi when she said, oh, we've got to pass this bill and this health care thing, and then you can find out what's in it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go to any kind of a campaign function without that thing in my at least one barrel of my double barrel shotgun. I would have that, and I would be hitting them with it. If you're running against an embedded Democrat congressman who voted for that, boy, I'd be right in the middle of his case on that, and I would say, doesn't this all indicate that you're just a rubber stamp for Obama? A rubber stamp. I think that should be the one of the major, things that these Tea Party candidates need to be talking about. I'm not going to be a rubber stamp for Obama.
You know, one thing I have really notice for some time, and you again, both you guys are, all of you are bringing up some very valid points, and I think one of the things that really hits me hard is that it's obvious so many of our people, as well as the journalists, and they're not even journalists anymore, but the call themselves journalists, one thing, they lack a lot of things, but one thing they have always lacked for quite some time now is the comprehension of history and evolution. They don't know the stories that led us up to where we are today, and it's very obvious. There's a great quote about this, and if I recall, it goes like, I cannot help but think of people without a sense of history as orphans, deprived of a greater sense of self and a wider whole, a wider self, and unable to fix themselves on the map of time. They don't even know the story in the old books as their own. I mean, when you think about how people do not understand the process that this country took to get to where it is, people are just thinking in the last 5-10 years, but they're not understanding the sacrifices and the blood that's been spilled and the great statesman that's come before us. One of the things, and I'm not a great fan of this lady, and I want to mention her name is Jane Pauley, who's NBC. I think she's done some good things, and the rest of it I'll just not talk about too much. But she was in back to her home state, Indiana some time ago, and I remember that she was, and I admire her for what she did here. She was talking to a bunch of students, and they were talking about courses, which, you know, they recommended what kind of courses they should take, and they were wondering, well, should I take this kind of TV course, or do I take, you know, and they wanted to know what, how they could become like Jane Pauley. And to her credit, here's what she said. She said, you shouldn't take any of those things. She says, if you want to be a great journalist, she says, take history. She said, the people who are creating the stories today, sadly, do not know what they're talking about because they don't understand the story. And if you say you can't be a journalist unless you know what these cultures have been through and how they got to this point. Now, when I listen to most of the people on the Hill talk, the few that are reading the bills or attempt to read the bills, there is a great sense, there's a great void there of understanding who we really are. In a town hall meeting that took place not far from here, back in January, our representative from this district was trying to spin a quote out of Benjamin Franklin. Well, I was in the room, and since I have studied Benjamin Franklin real intently for many years, I caught him in the act, and I actually, and just what you were talking about, Red, I wasn't willing to let him rubber stamp anything. He was trying to spin a something that Benjamin Franklin never said and that would never have meant, but he's trying to spin it in the to protect the whole healthcare thing. And I yelled out in this middle of this packed room, I yelled out to the congressman, I said, respectfully, sir, respectfully. And the whole, he stopped. And he looked at me, and I took over the room. And I told him what the real quote was. And then I also told him, I said, what Mr. Franklin and all the founders were trying to say here is that they were warning us about the government that would be get so big in simulation to the one we have today. And when I said that, the entire crowd, the entire room exploded in applause. And sheepishly, our congressman had to move on to another subject. But it's just that people have to know, they have to know this story. You know, we tell bedtime stories or we tell other stories to our kids. I don't know if some parents even say anything about, aren't even imaginative anymore, but we really have to be storytellers about our own heritage. And most people, including most educators, have no clue what we're talking about. And it's that one when, but now I really do see, I mean, the sales of books and videos about the founders and about the Constitution and Declaration, I mean, the sales have really been increasing. And this tells me that more, and from what I've seen more people latch on to a thought process of our founders. And I would agree with you, Red, and Terry, that it's way, way behind the times. We're at least 25 years behind catching up to what we should have been at this point. But I really see that if anything that Barack Hussein Obama has done is that he has ignited the sense of patriotism and the sense of urgency to reclaim what are the foundation of our republic, like no other conservative or Republican candidate probably ever could have done. And so for that, I give him an A.
Mm-hmm.
For everything else, I assign him the F troop. But it's just, it's really interesting to watch the shifting dynamic. And I think it's going to be an in thing very soon to be somewhat scholarly about our founders. Because I hear people accurately quoting the founders like I have never witnessed in my life before.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to say something here that I think would fit in.
Mm-hmm.
In May this year, there was a group in Montana that supported and produced a Liberty Convention in Missoula, Montana. And I had an invitation to be there, and I wasn't in any physical shape to go anyplace, but I went because I was just determined to be there for it. And so I was on the program, and that was announced, and it was advertised, widely advertised and such. And the local newspaper in Missoula, Montana, it's the Daily Missoulian. It's part mm-hmm. of the Lee Enterprises newspaper chain. And they proceeded to try to destroy
mm-hmm.
This Liberty conference that was coming up. And they badmouthed me pretty seriously. And of course, I didn't find out about it until I got there ahead of time. But anyway, when I spoke, I brought out how that the Daily Missoulian had badmouthed me pretty seriously earlier in the week. And I brought out how that the Daily Missoulian, they call themselves a newspaper. But that's not true. They are not a newspaper. And this is something that these candidates out here, new people in the movement, they need to hear what I'm saying. These are not newspapers. They're abusing the language because they're calling them newspapers, and they're not newspapers. They are propaganda sheets for the government, state, local, federal, all of them. And, of course, I'm a co-author of the book, The Law That Never Was. I'm the inspiration behind the book, or the collection of over 17,000 certified documents proving that the 16th Amendment was never ratified. That's the income tax. Well, this was the month of May, and the book, The Law That Never Was, came off the press in April of 1985, 25 years. And I held the book up, and I said, now, this book has been out these 25 years. And I said, never once. Well, one of the things that they said when they were trying to badmouth me earlier in the week, they said, Red Beckman says that the 16th Amendment was never ratified. Well, I jumped on that, and I said, in 25 years, the Daily Missoulian, the Helena Independent Record, the Montana Standard at Butte and the Billings Gazette at Billings, Montana, all these newspapers, they've known about them. I had put them on notice of what we had. And in 25 years, they had never sent an investigative reporter to me and said, Red, you're saying that the 16th Amendment wasn't ratified. What do you base your statement on? Never. In all of 25 years,
mm-hmm.
not one newspaperman came and wanted to see what kind of documentation we had to prove our point. That is not a newspaper. It is a propaganda sheet. They're mm-hmm. selling this under false pretenses. And I just found out here a week ago that the newspaper is losing money like it's going out of style.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, there's a newspaper in a small town of about 5,000 or something like that, a newspaper there. The Daily Missoulian is taking it over because the little paper in the small town can't make it. They're going under. And, you see, you've got to point this out that these media people are not news people. They don't come and get the straight story from you. They don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, you know, you've got to bring this to the people's attention. I told them, I said, why would anybody spend good money to buy propaganda? Which is what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some of these new candidates, I think they could use this to an advantage as the as they spar with the media.
Well, I was going to say I really feel there needs to be strategy and workshops for candidates to get this kind of realism and shakedown, so that they can be a little more prepared. You're right. They're heading out there, a babe in the wilderness, and it's ambush time. And but I do think more than ever that the ridicule of the media industry in general is becoming commonplace, and no one takes these people as seriously as they used to, which is good. All the ratings have fallen off for all the major, for most of the major entities in the media, and they're struggling. And so I would say, Red, though, the follow-through has to be organized, teaching and learning skills for these people to become real warriors out there, and for candidacies that will help them along.
Well, we've got about 9 minutes to go. Do you want to do any promotion to anybody out there, Gary, regarding any Tea Party or Statesman candidates as to who they should be contacting, or website or email that they could make contact with you?
Sure, I would love to. Let me first explain, how we do this. And Terry, you've been through the process, and one of the reasons. Let me explain how we. First of all, what we came up with, and you really won't appreciate it until you get into the website and you have your own, password and username on there, which we will send over to you. But I just want to run through who is creating this besides myself. We have a very interesting team of professionals, and when I say professionals, these are people who are award-winning editors, music composers, filmmakers who work with me in my projects. But what's really amazing about this is that everybody who's on our team is in it for the passion and the cause. Everyone in this project with us who created the announcements that you will see all feel the urgency that something is about to be shaken up here, and maybe forever. And they feel they see the threat to their children and their grandchildren. So every one of the members in our team, they're all constitutionalists, which is very, very rare to find in this business. And we feel it is serendipitous the way we all came together over the last several years. Some of us have been together a long time, but the rest of us have been coming together, I think, for this purpose. And when we're all dedicated, we're all dedicated. So that in a nutshell are some of the team members. If I simply tell you is that if you have watched some of the best shows on the History Channel and Discovery and sometimes PBS and others, I'll guarantee you, you have seen our work in the past over the last 12, 13 years. But more importantly is that we wanted to take our resources and our skills and our passion and turn it into something that could be not only affordable, but extremely well designed and hit the mark. What you're going to see here is that, and Terry, I do you agree that these are so different from other ads and that we do not attack anybody?
Well, I mean, it's totally different than the blood sucking stuff.
Well, anyway, so much of your endorsement, but no, seriously. But seriously, what this is that by using, we decided to approach this thing by using the founder's statements and their reasoning and their language, and also the using our interlacing a number of the spots with our some of our cinematic scenes in a very special warm parchment way in layers and 3D, sometimes some 3D components. It really gets people to focus on the message, and your opponents cannot attack you, because if they attack you, they're committing political suicide against, because they're attacking the foundation of this country. So as you look at it, you'll understand what our the reasoning for our madness here, and we would like to talk to you. So the best way to do this is send me an email that you would like to get your own access to the website. And the reason we're doing this is so that it protects you and us, so that people just don't click and drag and put it on YouTube and then or try to change it in some way. I mean, we have to be very careful, because there's a lot of thieves and pirates out there. But the point is, if you email me, and here's my email address, it's glf.frontier@att.net. And I'll also give you my phone number. My phone number is area code 219-477-3740. Now you can, in a central zone, so I'm usually up very early talking to the East Coast, and then I'm staying up late talking to people on the West Coast every day. But the point is, you can, if you get a hold of me through email, we will send you your access points so that you get into this, look at it, and then get back to us and let us know how we can help you the most. But we got a lot of great things, and we think this is just the beginning, because we want to build. If we're successful here, we want to build on it by helping you with more new cinematic imagery, very compelling statements that can be made right across the country. And we want to make it uplifting. We want to make it very epic, but we also want to make it completely in connection with the founding base of this country. And I think you'll all understand where we're coming from when you see it.
Well, I really, really appreciate you coming on with us again. It's been a few months since we've had you on, and you've been a great guest every time we've been on here, and I really appreciate your work, but I also appreciate your attitude and the way you approach all this stuff, and I want to keep that relationship going, because I think we can do some things in the future, and I certainly support whatever you're doing, because it's the high road, and that's the great part about it. I loved your plan before about doing basically constitutional subjects in shorts, so that we can get it out there and get the points and education out there in the mainstream media in a way that they wouldn't put anything else out there that would accomplish the same thing because of the way you approach it. And I just think it's brilliant, and it's always good to visit with you.
Well, thank you, Terry. And Red, sure good catching up with you again. And we're looking forward to joining forces with you each and every time. So thanks for including me again.
Red?
Well, I think that we've had quite a variety tonight for the 2 hours. And I hope that... We had those out there listening, and I hope we did something right, and that we helped people adjust things in their minds to assimilate what we're saying and what we're trying to promote. This country is worth saving, and we've all got to work at it. We've all got to be involved in getting this country back on track. And I don't care how insignificant you might think you are, but you you need to fill your space with you and fill it with the intent of being a plus, being an asset to the country. And every one of you can be an asset to the country. With that, I've enjoyed the program myself. And Gary, I'm sure glad that we got you on again. And
thank you.
Gary, of course, until next time,
indeed.
It's very good.
See everybody next week. Good night, Red. Good night, Gary.
Good night.
Good night.
American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, cause there ain't no doubt I love this land, God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and face.